Genesis 37, we've talked about everything up to this point. Most recently, of course, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And now we transition into the next major character, being Joseph. It says, Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought to his father their evil report. So we see that Joseph has this unique relationship with his father, where he reports on his brothers. He reports on the enterprise and how it's going, and he gets a reputation for being something of a tattletale, something of a mole. And so it was creating problems with his brothers. In verse 3, Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was a son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And if you want to add to the problem of not trusting Joseph, now you add to that the fact that there's favoritism shown by their father, and so it increases the jealousy. And then there's this coat of many colors that sets him apart from everyone else. It attracts attention. I don't know if you really say flamboyant, but for its day, I would say it was. And so this jealousy begins to get in there. Verse number 4, when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. Let me just say, jealousy is a lousy companion. It is. And if you ever get a hint of jealousy in your heart, do what you can to get rid of it. Because it's a poison. It's toxic. Whether you're jealous over someone else's mate or someone else's house or someone else's car or boat or their health. And, you know, you wouldn't think you'd be jealous of someone else's health, but that's true, you know. We go through things and we say, well, why is it that they're healthy and they do all the things they do and I eat acorns and hickory nuts and I can't seem to lose weight? You know, what is it about that? So people can't even get jealous about their health, their income or whatever. There's all kind of ways that we get jealous of other people, and jealousy is a spiritual cancer that eats our peace and our joy. And it even eats our hope, and it takes away our contentment, and it leads to hate and resentment. It leads to the point where we can't even speak peaceably with them, and we can't make eye contact with them. Why? Because there's nothing wrong with them. There's something wrong with us. And it's just something that we don't seem to be able to get over. So if you ever get a hint of jealousy in your heart, recognize it. That's the first thing. You got to recognize it. And if you see it in your spouse or in your children or your friend, somebody that you believe you can talk to plainly, tell them, hey, jealousy's going to kill you. That's one of the big problems. And you know, we deal with it a lot. I dealt with it a lot as a manager in business, and people would get jealous. Well, how come he makes more than I make? Well, how do you know what he makes? That's the first question. But people are jealous over what other people have, and we just need to be content with our own. Don't wait for somebody else. You build it yourself. Do it yourself. Go get it yourself. Pursue it yourself. But we get jealous about what other people have, and we don't know what led to their circumstances. And also, don't forget this, there's this thing called a Facebook life. Y'all ever seen those Facebook lives? Where people put one picture on Facebook and one life on Facebook, and that's not really reflective of the reality. You know, it's all a facade. It's all just a show, but in truth, there's a whole lot of problems and a whole lot of difficulty in their lives. Don't be that way. Don't act that way. Don't put on a front. But understand something, you're jealous of somebody, but you don't know what goes on behind the scenes. You don't know what's going on in their heart, in their mind, in their lives, what they're dealing with. So jealousy just doesn't help anybody. Verse 5, Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. The dream made them feel like they were justified in their feelings toward him. You understand that? They they didn't like him. Their dad had favoritism toward him, and so they felt like they were justified to not like him. He had this nice coat that they didn't have, so they didn't like him. And then he dreamed a dream, and now they said, "See, I told you he wasn't a good person. I knew there was a reason I didn't like that kid." And verse number 6, he said, "Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field. Lo, my sheaf arose and stood upright. And behold, your sheaf stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf." Now, I don't know. I imagine that would not sit well with me if somebody told me you were bowing down to me in the field. But it justified in their hearts, they felt absolutely justified for their hatred toward Joseph. Verse 8. His brethren said to him, "Shalt thou indeed reign over us? Shalt thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. He dreamed yet another dream and told it his brethren, and said, "Behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me." So basically what he was saying, and you probably know somebody like this that thinks the world revolves around them. But in his mind, in his dream, they were all at his direction. They were all at his will. And that didn't settle well with anybody. But wait a second, the sun and the moon, who would that represent? That would represent his parents. And his father, verse 10, he told it to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth?" Verse 11, and his brethren envied him. But his father observed the saying. Now, think about this and understand. Because we know the rest of the story, because we know what will happen in Joseph's future, we understand the dealing with the sheaves, the grain. We understand the weather and him being able to calculate and understand the weather. How that God gave him the vision and the understanding to preserve the land of Egypt through the famine, while all the rest of the land, because of the weather, Brother Sonny talked about needing rain. And he was able to then plan out so that they would have plenty of harvest, plenty of store, so that he could save his family, and that at one point they would come and bow down before him. If you recall that, we haven't studied it here, but most of you are familiar with the story and how it goes. And it says his brothers envied him, but his father reflected on it. He observed it. He considered it. He began to wonder, what was the manner of it? You see, Jacob knew Joseph. He understood Joseph. It didn't mean he always agreed with him. But with something like this, Jacob wondered if there wasn't some valuable point to it. If it wasn't some heavenly message, some message from God, and God using Joseph in the future. Verse 12, his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. Israel said to Joseph, "Do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee to them." And he said to him, "Here am I." He's ready to go, willing to serve. He said to him, "Go, I pray thee. See whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks. Bring me word again." So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. The man asked him, saying, "What seekest thou?" He said, "I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks." And the man said, "They are departed hence. I heard them say, let us go to Dothan." And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. So Joseph went to check on his brothers for his dad, and they weren't where they were supposed to be. They said there would be one place, but they weren't there. But rather than return home and just say, "Dad, I couldn't find them. They weren't where they said they would be," he wandered around trying to find the answer. And finally came across that man. That man sent him on to Dothan. And when they saw him, verse 18, afar off, even before he came near to them, they conspired against him to slay him. They said one to another, "Behold, this dreamer cometh." So Joseph is just being obedient, just doing what his father sent him to do. We look through the Bible and we see Saul seeking after his father's herd. We also see David as he goes at his father's direction into the field, the military field. And he ends up killing Goliath. But he just went to check on his brothers, whether it was well with them. So what was happening here was not unusual. They didn't have cell phones and satellite and all those kind of things. And so they just had to go in a great distance walking out there trying to find his brothers. And he's just doing his job, not causing any harm. And what happens? His brothers say, "We're going to kill him when he gets here. We're far enough away from home. Nobody will know what happened, and we'll just kill him." Fortunately, in verse number 20, they say, "Come now, therefore, let us slay him and cast him into some pit. We'll say some evil beast devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams." But fortunately, Reuben heard it and delivered him out of their hands and said, "Let us not kill him." You see what jealousy will do? Jealousy got to the point of a blind rage. I don't think any of these guys would have thought it in any of their hearts that they could kill somebody, much less to kill their own brother. They didn't think about the consequences. What would happen when they came home and told their dad, "Hey, Joseph's been killed"? What would happen when they came home with that coat of many colors and shred and with blood on it and they said, "Look, Dad, something bad happened to Joseph and he's dead"? But they didn't think about anybody else. They didn't think about Joseph. They didn't think about right and wrong. Why? Because they were drunk on jealousy. It was a rage. It blinded them to what was right, and it blinded them to what they would do, what the consequences would be. They became furious. Reuben convinced them just to leave him in a pit, not to kill him. Verse 22, Reuben said unto them, "Shed no blood, cast him into a pit that's in the wilderness. Lay no hand upon him that he might rid him out of their hands and deliver him to his father again." So Reuben intended to come get him and take him home after they were all gone. It came to pass, verse 23, when Joseph was come, they stripped Joseph of his coat, his coat of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And verse 25, that first phrase just really tells me about these guys. "And they sat down to eat bread." Didn't think a thing. They did not care. They were satisfied with their deed. In their hearts, now understand something, in their minds they were leaving him for dead. They didn't kill him, but they as good as killed him because he had no way out. There was no one there to help him. They didn't care what happened to him. And they sat down to eat. Why? That's what jealousy does. It changes our morals. It changes our discipline. It changes our patterns. You see, anytime we get into sin, anytime we embrace sin and sinfulness and ungodliness, it changes who we are. And we look back and we feel justified. We look back and we're satisfied with our deed. We're satisfied that we did what we had to do. But that's what sin does. It calluses our hearts. Verse 25, they sat down to eat bread. They lifted up their eyes and looked. And behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. Judah said to his brethren, "What profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. Let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh." Finally, he remembered he was his brother, didn't he? Finally, just a little bit of compassion. Finally, just a little sense of family. Let's not kill him. But really, if we'll go back up there, we'll find out what the real root was. We're not going to gain anything if we just kill him. But we can get a little something from these traitors if we'll give them a slave. If we'll sell them, we can profit. So when the Bible says that the love of money is the root of all evil, here we see another. We see the jealousy and the greed. And isn't that what jealousy is all about anyway? Selfishness. We live in a selfish society. It's rampant. Judah convinced them to sell him, and they did. Verse number 28. Then there passed by Midianites, merchantmen. They drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit. Sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph to Egypt. Reuben, who had not been part of this whole conspiracy, returned to the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit. And he rent his clothes and returned to his brethren and said, "The child is not, and I, where shall I go? Where shall I look for him? Where? What can I do? I can't return home and say, 'Dad, we threw him in a pit and we don't know what happened.' What's going to happen to me?" They took Joseph's coat, verse 31, and killed a kid of the goats, dipped the coat in the blood. And they sent the coat of many colors and brought it to their father and said, "This have we found. Know now whether it be thy son's coat or no." I don't know if you're catching what happened here, but these cowards didn't even go home. They took the coat and put blood on it, gave it to one of the servants and said, "Take this to Dad and ask him, just say, hey, is this Joseph's coat?" Verse 33, he knew it. He said, "It is my son's coat. An evil beast has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces. And Jacob rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and daughters rose up to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted. And he said, 'I will go down into the grave and to my son, mourning.' Thus his father wept for him." There was a cover-up. Imagine the heartbreak of this father. Imagine the guilt of these sons as they carried this with them for all those years. There was this secret. There was this dark, dirty secret that each of them concealed in their hearts. They never confessed it. They never admitted to it. They just hid it away in their hearts. And don't you know that it compromised their relationships with each other? The Bible says they... how does it say it? They wonder why you don't run with them into their sin. But the truth is, if we go and play sin with the world, they will respect us less. They may not join us in our faith, but they respect us in our faith. And if we join them in their sin, they will lose respect for us. So don't ever be convinced that if we'll just be more like them, then we'll win them to Jesus. That's not how it works. We've got to be disciplined. We've got to be biblical. And so we see Joseph's loyalty to his father, the dreams, the showdown, the cover-up. And then finally in verse 36, the Midianites sold him to Egypt, to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, and the captain of the guard. If we were to look at this story without knowing the rest of the story, we could stay focused on the sins of the brothers, the heartlessness. I don't know about you, but I guess I wonder why somebody didn't say, "Let's go find that boy and bring him home." But seeing their father heartbroken didn't change them. Why? Because they were calloused by their sin. That's what happens with jealousy. That's what happens with greed. That's what happens with rage. We feel justified. And though we may keep it a secret because we don't want to confess it out loud, we don't think that we owe God an apology. We don't think that we need forgiveness. Because we feel justified for what we've done. Don't play with sin. Last verse shows us that though Joseph had endured, I think that right now, a crisis, you would say. And in verse 36, he was sold into Potiphar's house. And he thrived there. And then he went to prison. And he thrived there. And then he was let out. And he thrived there. You see, there are a lot of people today saying, well, I'm not successful because of the way I was brought up. I'm not successful because of my environment. I'm not successful because I hit a few rough spots in the road. But we'll see of a truth. Now you say, but it was the hand of God. Every one of us here knows God and has the opportunity to have the hand of God in our lives. The favor of God in our lives. But not if we just sit back and wait for it. We've got to get active. We've got to get busy. And let God show Himself strong. But verse 36, I'm glad verse 36 is part of this chapter. Because it shows us that we're not at the end of the story. No matter where you are, no matter what you're going through, and I hope you'll share this part of the message with everyone that you come across who's going through a crisis. And remind them, this is not the end of the story. Let's stand.